Good morning and welcome to the Thursday, September 24th, 2009 edition of the Investigative Journal. I'm your host, Greg Szymanski. You're listening to LibertyRadioLive.com. My guest today is Cheryl Barnes. Cheryl is a mother, and also Cheryl formed a citizens activist group years ago regarding the abuses, a watchdog group regarding the abuses of child family protective services throughout the country. She was a victim of a child of abuse by one of the agencies, and this stimulated her to form an organization to act as a watchdog to see what's really going on with child protective services in America. We're going to revisit. They're actively involved, Cheryl's group, along with the Alamo Ministry attorneys, with the case of over 35 children being taken by child protective services in Arkansas. There's never been any abuse charges ever proved by the agency, but they still continue to take children. It's an incredible story, and we're going to get to Cheryl in 1 minute. Cheryl, I just want to check to see if you're there.
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. Just be patient for a moment, because I just wanted to introduce this story. There's two things going on in the Alamo Ministry story that I revisit every Thursday. The first is the case of Tony Alamo, who's been convicted on sex charges, and I, as a journalist over the years and also being in the legal profession for many years, I've seen a lot of innocent people go to jail. I've also seen a lot of guilty people go to jail that claim they're innocent. Now, in the case of Tony Alamo, it reminds me of a story when I was a young reporter, and I covered a story about a gentleman who spent 25 years in jail. He was an ex-boxer from Detroit, and he was framed on a murder charge. And the story goes deep into why he was framed. But after 25 years, he proved his innocence. And I had an opportunity to interview this man over a period of 3 days. And when I listened to his story, I began to understand, when I was only 22 years old, how our government, how the police, how the feds, how our government can frame people if they want to. This was a case of a man who lost 25 years of his life, and I never forget that story. And in the case of Tony Alamo, just as in the case of a couple other people that I've interviewed on my program, I firmly believe that they're innocent. And the case of Alamo is interesting because when you look at what Tony's ministry does, he's done nothing but good around the world. I mean, I've talked to people from one coast to the other. I've met them personally. And he's done nothing but help them in every way possible, financially, providing jobs. He created so many different areas of work for people in a time when our economy is being devastated. Now, one of the things he did in the spiritual realm was to talk openly against the Vatican. I believe this led to what the persecution that his ministry has received, as well as the conviction that now stands in front of Tony Alamo. He'll be sentenced on October 23rd. And the ministry is asking people to write letters to the judge regarding the things that Tony Alamo has done over the years to help people. So I encourage you to do that. You can contact the ministry, alamoministries.com, to get the information on how to do that. Now, secondly, regarding Tony Alamo, before I get to the case of the children that it's going on right now, regarding Tony, they claim he's a child sex abuser. Now, never has there been any allegations prior to this case regarding that. And they've persecuted this ministry for 40 years. Now, I talked to Jim Rothstein, who investigated. He's a police detective, a former police detective in New York, who's investigated pedophilia, who's investigated pedophiles for years. And one of the things about pedophiles is they don't just become pedophiles at a late age of 60 or 70, like Tony Alamo is. Tony's 74 right now. They started at a young age. And in this case, Jim Rothstein was one of the men around the country that had his hands on most every case from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And never did the name of Tony Alamo come up. Now, over the year, now that leads me to believe that the government is framing him. That's just one thing. Now, secondly, what also is interesting about this case is that the government has come up with five witnesses since the last persecution of Alamo in the 90s, who claimed that Tony took these girls across state lines and had sex with them. Now, never was that proved in court. The jury proved that by going to the judge right before they came up with their verdict. and said this, asked the judge, if we don't have any evidence that Mr. Alamo took children across state lines for sex, can we still convict him? Now, any judge in his right mind understands that question. If there's no evidence regarding the charge, how can you convict a man? But instead of giving them a flat yes or no answer, you can't convict if you don't have evidence regarding the charge in front of this man, the judge says, just read my jury instructions. So what the judge does, basically, is he tells the jury, go back and find him guilty. Now, secondly, if Tony Alamo was a child molester, there would be people coming out of the woodwork in the last 30 or 40 years talking about him, not just five girls that the government, the question here is how these girls were treated, how this evidence was obtained, and there's good evidence to show that the evidence of these five girls was obtained coercion. Also, at least one of the five now has recanted their testimony, talked about how they were coerced. Now, doesn't that lead you to believe that something's fishy here? All I'm asking is that if you want to look at this case and you want to convict a man in the press, you better go and start looking deeper. And nothing here is it's a kangaroo court that's put a man who's done a lot of good for people, who's had controversial views, especially against a mainstream Luciferian government, and for that he's been persecuted. But not only has he been persecuted, they're going a step farther this time, and they're taking, we're going to move to the story of the children now, they're taking over 35 children and putting them into Child Protective Services to disband this ministry, and telling these people, you better either leave the ministry, get another job. They're basically dictating how we live in America. It's an unconstitutional invasion. Now, Cheryl Barnes has now teamed up with the Alamo Ministry and their attorneys to try to get some justice here. And I want to talk about this case in general with Cheryl, as well as the latest events. And let me just tell you what the latest events are. Cheryl contacted me yesterday and asked if she could come on the show. Now, Cheryl wrote a letter to me, and I'm going to get to that. But first of all, let me introduce what we're going to talk about. There's a couple that are involved in the Alamo Ministry. Their name is Carlos and Sophia Parrish. They've had two of their children taken away. And to get them back, the judge in this case, in Child Protective Services, has asked them to work out a case plan. Now, they've been working out a case plan with them, and the government, up until a few days ago, hasn't had any complaints. Two of the issues, though, they haven't really conformed with was, one, they were asked to leave the ministry. That's kind of strange. That's like asking me to throw my Bible away if I'm a Bible believer. You can't read the Bible anymore, and then you can have your child back. Secondly, they were asked to, first, to leave the ministry, and two, to find employment away from the Alamo ministry. So then they're telling me, well, listen, Greg, if you want your kid back, you better get another job. And we're going to tell you what job you're going to get. So basically, they're dictating how I'm supposed to make a living in my country. Now, is that what a government is supposed to do? Hell no. I've said a long time ago, we don't need government in our family life. And that's exactly what's happening here. Now, Carlos and Sophia then wanted to help the other 30. So they signed an affidavit just recently, along with Cheryl Barnes, and Cheryl Barnes and the attorney for the Alamo, Mr. Kuhn, the attorney for the Alamo Ministry Children, who have filed a federal injunction to stop this illegal procedure in Arkansas. And guess what happens? The affidavit says, Carlos writes and he says, my child, the three-month-old child that just has been born, has never been abused and is being treated just like the other 35 children who are never abused. And how come my child hasn't been taken and they've taken all the other children? So he's sticking up for his friends. He's sticking up to get these children back. And guess what happens? 2 days after Carlos writes that letter, DHS in Arkansas issues an order to take the three-month-old baby from them. Now tell me if that isn't retaliation. Cheryl Barnes writes me a letter then and says in the last lines of the letter, I feel responsible for what's happening here. I almost feel responsible for Carlos losing his child, who's 3 months old now. And with those words, I want you to listen to this story closely. Cheryl, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. Let's go back and talk about this story from your point of view. You said you feel slightly responsible for what's happening. I want you to know you're not. You're doing the right thing. But tell us what's really going on here so people around the country finally open up their ears. Go ahead.
Well, this family, by the way, they have four children in state care, and their youngest, I think, was 7 months old at the time the four were taken, and she was still nursing. So the new baby was born 3 months ago. They didn't do anything. The affidavit that they submitted for the federal case basically says that they live in the same house, they go to the same church, the conditions are exactly the same as when they removed their other four children, and yet DHS hasn't taken any action. And the reason we attached that with the federal complaint was to prove that DHS doesn't believe the environment is dangerous. And so either it's dangerous for children or it's not dangerous for children. If the environment's not dangerous, that means that the children were taken for some other reason, such as to force them to leave the church. They told them 2 days after that they were going to take that baby because the parents were uncooperative. They, at a supervised visit, the worker yelled at them and called them names, said they were going to terminate their rights to all their kids and they were going to take the baby. The very next day, they filed a petition to take the baby. And they said that at the hearing on October 27th, they're going to recommend to terminate their rights to all five kids instead of just the four that are already in custody.
So basically right now, they've issued an order to take the three-month-old, but have they actually taken the three-month-old to the best of your knowledge?
No, and they filed a petition asking the court. The court hasn't ruled on it. The court set it for October 27th.
Okay, so they filed a petition with the court. DHS Services has filed a petition to take this three-month-old baby. They already have two of Carlos and Sophia's children, right?
Four of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you a question. You've been following this case closely. You know Carlos and Sophia. Has there ever been any inclination of any kind of child abuse regarding the four children in custody?
Absolutely not. He was accused in the original pleading of slapping one of his sons in the face, and he denies that that happened, but even if it did, it wouldn't have been abuse. That's the only allegation made against him, other than he lives on church property and is employed by the church. And you mentioned the thing about employment. You can't take a person's kids away for being a stripper, for example, or any kind of employment. We can't tell people where to work. We can't tell people where to live. They have offered no evidence that any of the kids are abused. These parents in particular are very kind and very soft-spoken. They're always complaining during visits that their kids are saying that the foster people yell at them or that sort of thing. And, they're just great people, so they should not lose their kids at all. It's crazy, and I don't understand why the public isn't more outraged.
I'll tell you why the public isn't more outraged, because I'm going to just lay it right on the line. Most people in this country just don't give a damn. Most people in this country don't really care if their next-door neighbor is falsely accused, don't really care if their next-door neighbor keels over and dies, because this country has been a victim of propaganda by this government and the Vatican that I talk about to an unprecedented level, where most people are walking around as clinically sociopathic. And that's why people don't care about other people anymore. That's why people in New York can walk by a dead body that's laying in the street because of a homeless person that's been there for 3 weeks and not even blink an eye. That's why people don't care. And that's why it's important that we reach the few people left in this country that do care about their families, that do care about what you talk about. So I don't really give a damn about 99% of the people in this country anymore, because they don't really give a damn about the few people that are trying to do the right thing. And that's what's happened from my point of view. It may be a bit harsh, but I've looked at this story closely for months, and I've reached a point where I just shake my head and I say the same thing you just said. It is just crazy. I don't have an explanation outside of basically just a fascist government has moved in and declared that if you don't listen to what we tell you, we're going to find every loophole possible to jail your kids, to take away your livelihood, and even to take away your property. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, that's kind of how it's working. You know, both France and Sego, they recommend termination for their kids, so which are the two plaintiffs in the federal injunction. And the people, I'm pretty shocked even at people in our own team. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to risk violating the gag order and things of that nature. And I feel like of the group, I have the most to lose. I have 12 kids living at home still. And that we can't just let these people lose their kids. And, you know, we told them a plan that should have worked, that has worked before, to get the injunction. And they trusted us completely. And I really feel like they've been betrayed and that we've let them down, mainly because the federal judge just isn't ruling on anything. He hasn't said yes. He hasn't said no. I think part of the problem is he's the same judge as in the criminal trial. And so in the meantime, the state is just doing whatever the hell they want. And after the federal court's last ruling where he said he was inclined to rule for the state, they've just gone ahead and done whatever they want. And their act of trying to take this new baby is so retaliatory. There's not a single allegation given in the petition to take him other than their other kids are in foster care and they haven't got church housing or employment.
Well, since we have your other four kids, and since we haven't, you know, let's just say it the way it is. They haven't even proved any abuse charges on those four kids or the other 35 children. But then they say, well, because we have them, we can take the other one without any evidence of abuse, just because.
Exactly.
And it's just crazy. And I don't, you know, I understand how you feel. What can you do, though? I know that the Alamo Ministry people, and I've talked to many of them, are behind you guys trying to help. And I know that you're up against a brick wall, but that doesn't mean that you're not doing the right thing. There's really, in this case, nothing really else we can do. What else? What other alternative? If anybody, does anybody have another alternative? I mean, what can we do? Run and hide? Take our children up into the mountains? Disband the ministry like they want? What can we do? You're trying, this, they've taken you into this legal matrix. The judge, obviously, is sitting back behind his black robes, thinking of little devious ways to make sure these kids are never brought back to their parents, and making sure that the mainstream media doesn't really bother covering it right so that he doesn't look bad. But in my estimation, if there's no evidence, if children are being taken away just because of their religious affiliation, then this judge is not basically fit to sit on that bench. Now, maybe he is fit to sit on that bench because this bench is a corrupt bench. And maybe that's all we have, are people that are fit to sit on corrupt benches and give corrupt orders against good people. And maybe that's the system we've created. Maybe it needs to be changed. But in this case, we have 35 children. Let me give you an example of an interesting... Well, let's do this after the break. I don't want to get into Bert Krantz's story yet, because this story just, to me, needs to be told across the country, and everyone needs to wake up. I've talked about child abuse, not in the of these protective services agencies all over this country. You've talked about your story. You got involved with it, Cheryl, because of what happened to you. In a few minutes before the break, can you just recap that so people know why you got involved to start this watchdog group?
Well, my seventh son was removed from my care because I refused to apply for Medicaid, and he was subsequently severely abused in foster care and is now brain injured and permanently legally blind. We won our case on appeal, but it took 22 months for that to happen. But the appellate court ruled that they shouldn't even have investigated that complaint.
And so from that point, you took you basically fought against them. You have 12 children of your own.
I have 14 children.
14 children of your own. What an unusual in this day and age for such a large family. But I congratulate you on bringing and that we could spend hours just talking about that. That's an incredible story, and makes me smile when I listen to you because you've dedicated your life. You put your name on the line right now. You have a lot to lose right now. You have 14 children of your own. Child Protective Services is watching you. They persecuted you in the past and tried to disband your agency, or not your agency, but your watchdog group, because of criticizing government agencies who are invading the privacy of good Americans. But you haven't stopped.
Well,
I know it's difficult for you.
I couldn't because I have already 3 grandchildren. I'm going to have more grandchildren. And I can't just hide in my house and think that I'm safe here. It's kind of like the story of Esther. I always think of her, that she would have been safe on her own if she had not gone to the king in behalf of the Jews. But Mordecai said, yeah, sure, you'll be safe for now, but not forever. And it's sort of the same situation, that I could just sit in my house and keep my mouth shut at the time with my kids until some future date when something happens to us.
And maybe many other mothers in America should read the story of Esther as well. Thanks for reminding me of that. And that really basically is the bottom line why Cheryl has come forward and has started this watchdog group. You can't just sit back in your home and think it's not going to happen to you. Well, you can. And I guess you can rationalize and live with yourself. But when you see this happen to people, like, you know, it's hard for me because I meet these people and I've looked them in the eyes. And I know what they're about. And to see friends like this get treated this way, when is it going to happen to you? That's the next question. It can happen to you tomorrow. So I would say stand up while you can and really listen to this story. We have another half hour, Cheryl. What basically, right now, you've talked to Carlos. Why do you feel that you've kind of been, they've been betrayed? And the people at the Alamo Ministry have been betrayed.
Well, I had done another injunction case in 2002, and the injunction was granted in 6 days. And they probably thought that that was going to be the same for them, and I certainly thought they would have had it by now. I didn't expect it to be this corrupt. The big problem is, like I said, the judge is just ignoring the motion. If the judge doesn't make a ruling, you can't appeal. If he just sits on it and nothing happens, then you can't do anything in response. Some ways of going about that are to go, like with the writ of mandamus, to force the judge to rule on that motion. For the juvenile court judge, we put a half-page ad in the Texarkana Gazette offering free assistance with judicial complaints. A judicial complaint is more like an attack personally against the judge, not an appeal, but you can file a judicial complaint if you believe it.
Cheryl, hold that thought. We're going to take a 3-minute break. Back in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Nobody knows where we are now. I long to hear, I need to see. And I shed tears too many for me.
Fight the fight. We are here to equip you. Because you love the truth, LibertyRadioLive.com. Don't buy the sizzle of that steak until you understand the cost. In other words, don't buy the hype being dispensed by the rare coin pitchman of the alternative media until you understand the full story. FlyingEagleGold.com offers the most private, non-confiscable gold and silver coinage in the world at very competitive cost Jeffrey Bennett has been a purveyor of wealth protection, gold and silver bullion, and rare collectible coins for over 17 years. His personal experience reaches back to 1958, and he takes personal pride in putting your interests ahead of all else. To hear the whole story, not the hard sell, you're invited to call Flying Eagle Gold at 623-327-1778. That's 623-327-1778 for the truth about protecting your wealth. Join Jeffrey Bennett each day, Monday through Friday, when he hosts right here on LibertyRadioLive.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States in 1963.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President today.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to lead. It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
Okay, we're back on the Investigative Journal, and a personal note before I get back to Cheryl Barnes and this incredible story of how these children have just been snatched away from their parents for no reason, kidnapped. Let's just call it that, illegal kidnapping. I'm just shaking my head, thinking back on a personal note, if you just indulge me for a moment. I'm just shaking my head right now because I'm thinking back when I grew up, and I grew up in Chicago as a kid in the 60s. And I grew up at a time when I guess that president who was just speaking was a little punk himself. And the president speaking before him is probably one of the last people who, in his own kind of way, tried to fight against this monolithic group that the last president you heard works for. And they snuffed Kennedy out. I grew up at that period of time, and I remember my mother died when I was 10, and a Catholic priest, and my brother was only 6 months old. She died of leukemia. So, you know, I've always lived with this kind of pain. And there's nothing really anybody could do to me more painful than what happened to me when I was a kid. So maybe that's why I speak out, and I don't really care about what these people think of me. I don't really care what they do to me. I just want to look for the truth. Now, what happened was some idiotic bishop or Monsignor walked into my dad's living room after my brother and mom just died. My dad was a private businessman, and he said, Tony, the best thing to do is we're going to take your two kids and put them in an orphanage. Before that word got out, my dad just picked the guy up, put him up against the wall, and said, you get the hell out of here. And he threw him down the stairs, and the priest never came back, and my little brother never went to a Catholic school. My dad put him in a Lutheran school. So, you know, I know, looking back at a young age, what really these people are all about. And I'm just shaking my head to see how far down the road we've come from that day in the 60s when I watched a priest try to take me and my brother into an orphanage. And now I see what they've done is they basically employed the government to do their dirty work. And that's what's going on today, and I just shake my head because it's going on in more families. You know, I can just imagine if I grew up today and I was 10 and my brother was 6 months old, some DHS worker would have came in and taken me because my dad smoked Pall Malls and left a few butts laying around the house or didn't really clean up the house properly because he had to work, you know, from morning till night to take care of us. So I'd probably been in the same boat. So I really don't know why people just don't listen to this story. I'm sorry for indulging you so long, but I think it's important that we all share our personal experiences and make it a personal issue here, because it will happen to so many families, people that you know in the near future, that when you look back, you know, I don't want to be able to be saying, I told you so. Cheryl, let's get to this story now. Not only of the parishes, you've met Carlos and Sophia. What kind of people are they?
They're very kind, like I said, very soft-spoken, very gentle. And I feel especially responsible for them because we've told them all along they're not going to take the baby. They're not going to take the baby because the press is watching. Everyone's watching. And even the reporter Andy Davis said, oh, they wouldn't take the baby. That would be obvious retaliation. And now they're trying to take the baby. So, and it is obvious retaliation, but I feel like I didn't expect that to happen. For sure. And I expect people to be more outraged and stop that from happening. And people keep getting distracted with all this trivial nonsense instead of looking at the main point, which is you cannot take people's kids that aren't abused, no matter what. No matter if they go to a weird church, no matter if they don't work where you want them to work, their kids aren't abused. DHS admits they're not abused, and you cannot take people's kids because you don't like the way they're raising them.
Exactly. And the ministry had sent me a note regarding this case, and they echoed a lot of what we talked about. But in the last paragraph, I wanted to read this to you. Bert Krantz has had his children taken, and this is what has happened to these kids. I just wanted to emphasize this. Because we're talking about the parents, about religion, but what's the effect of the children that have been taken away, these young kids? The Krantz's, now this is what the ministry told me. The Krantz's 2-year-old boy won't let his mother touch him anymore. If she tells him she loves him, he yells back, "You don't love me." He and his younger sister don't even remember their 3-year-old sisters, and refuse to believe they even have a sister. The Krantz's have been told their parental rights are going to be terminated and all their children will be adopted out. Now, Bert Krantz and his wife have never abused their children. They brought them up in a wholesome environment. This is just basically as low as you can go to take their kids, their own flesh and blood. You know, it's just amazing, your comments on the Krantz case.
Exactly. Their 4 oldest children also are in an orphanage, so what likely will happen, honestly, is the babies will get adopted and the oldest will not. They will just age out of foster care. They moved their mother to Arkansas so she could try to get custody of the kids. The judge told a reporter that the grandmother should just go to court and ask to be heard. Of course she goes to court. She can't get past security Even the attorney for the parents said that she was outside and wanted to be heard. The judge said, oh, she'll have to get an attorney and file a motion. She has no money. She's not being supported by the church, so she can't get an attorney, and the judge is completely ignoring her. That she's the grandparent. She has a right to have placement of these children. She has a right to go to court and be heard. That's, as I was saying earlier, where we want to get more people to file judicial complaints against this judge, who clearly thinks he can do whatever he wants, and that would be Judge Griffin in the juvenile court. Then also they had suggested that her, Miriam's sister, could take the kids, and she's not in the church either. And Mary Helen Mitzel, the attorney for DHS, said, well, I think that they're listed on the pickup order. They're not listed on the pickup order. They've been out of the church for years, but they obviously won't consider any of their relatives for placement in retaliation. There is always problems with those kids at visits. All their belongings have been taken, stolen, lost, whatever. The DHS has made no efforts to get them back. We've even filed a motion in court, which is being ignored by Judge Griffin, to get their belongings back. State law requires that DHS keep track of belongings. State law also requires that siblings be placed together, and the director of DHS is supposed to write a report every month called a separated siblings report documenting the efforts that have been made to put the siblings together. No such reports exist. There's been no effort to put those siblings together. The orphanage that the older children are in doesn't take younger children, and that's their excuse for not trying to find a home for all six of them. They think the four kids are doing well in the orphanage. But obviously they're not, as you said. They don't remember their siblings and so on. And it's really difficult even to deal with those parents, you know, day to day, because they're so heartbroken and so sad. And, of course, they should be. And
yeah, I don't even know how they can function. I mean,
exactly.
I really, it's impossible. You take away your very blood. How can you still live? And I really don't know. And basically, the state has decided to disband this ministry. They've decided to break up families. And they're doing it to these young kids who will never. You know, they're destroying these kids at a young age, not giving the parents a chance to raise their children. The kids aren't getting a chance to really get the love and care from their own blood. And the state has stepped in. Now, just a comment. Just recently, there was a million-man march or something against Obama in Washington, and I looked at all these pictures of millions of people holding signs of, you know, grandmothers, get Obama out, blah, blah, blah. And when there is a hearing in Arkansas, maybe two or three people come out there. That's the problem in this country. You people out there think you're going to get any redress of grievances by going to Washington. You're crazy. You're basically marching for the wrong reasons. You have no idea what you're up against. If you had any inkling, you'd have a million people at that Arkansas courthouse. And this wouldn't go on. We'd have our families back, and we'd begin to have some kind of semblance of normality in this country. But if you start marching to Washington, barking up that tree, you're doing exactly what the Vatican-led New World Order wants you to do. And so wake up. That's my point. I mean, it's just amazing, Cheryl, you know, how people have been misdirected in this country and how in the very key areas of our life it's been ripped apart from us. Just in a short 30 or 40 years, I can think of we've slid downhill so far, I don't even know if this country can climb back up again. You've kept going throughout many difficulties. Tell us, you know, your main goal after your children, after you've seen the abuse personally, was to wake up families, to start a watchdog group. Over the years, this started in the 90s. Can you say without question that this abuse is not just localized in Arkansas or in your state, but a nationwide epidemic of abuse among child protective service agencies?
Absolutely. And, you know, ironically, you mentioned the Million Man March. I've actually worked on cases where parents have lost custody of their kids for letting them participate in political demonstrations. So whenever I see that on TV with the kids holding signs and stuff, I've done cases where people have lost their kids because of that.
All right. Yeah, and they'll use any tactic. I mean, they'll use anything to get these kids into their custody for financial reasons. We've discussed that before, how that works. But tell us about this nationwide epidemic and why people need to wake up.
Well, one thing I'd like to talk about is the adoption bonuses that were just awarded, $35 million in adoption bonuses to the states. The significant part about that is that the states only get paid a bonus on the increase of adoptions. So they have to increase adoptions every year in order to get that bonus. They get $5,000 per so-called normal child and $6,000 per so-called special needs. And it's interesting that if you adopt a sibling group, that's considered special needs. If one person adopts them, that would be $6,000 per child. So if you have 10,000 adoptions this year and you have 12,000 next year, you get paid for the $2,000 over that. What that creates is a need to take more kids into foster care. 43% of the adoptions from foster care are under age 5 when they were removed. So most, even though that law supposedly was to keep children from lagging in foster care and so on and so forth, that's not what it does at all. They just take more kids, and most of the kids that are adopted are under age 5. And so it's kind of like sales. I don't know if you've ever been in sales, but the more people you pitch to, the more likely you are to sell. It doesn't mean that your percentage of sales goes up. And the other thing that we really are trying to pitch to people right now is that all of this, foster care and everything, is paid for with Social Security money. I hope that we can really get senior citizens behind this act. I'm sure senior citizens would not mind having their Social Security money be used for children that are truly abused. But the vast majority of children in foster care are not abused, or they have able and willing relatives that would take custody of them. The reason the government doesn't give them custody or let them stay at home is because the states only get federal money when kids are in foster care.
Right, so it becomes like a bounty. You know, the more kids you can get, you can fudge evidence. We don't really want to know the truth here. We can create abuse where there is no abuse, because we have the power to do so. And then we're going to get money, we're going to get bonuses. And all the, you know, I just wonder about these foster care or these CHS workers who have children of their own. Don't they ever think about that? I mean, what do they think? They're protected? Probably. It's like most cops, I think, become cops because they can speed and not get a ticket anymore. You know, they feel like they have some power. They really don't take the oath to serve and help people. They take the oath to protect themselves against any kind of, they can do whatever the hell they want. That's just the feeling I get, because it used to be cops, you know, you'd sit in line at a grocery store with them and they'd be your friends. Now it's like standing next to a Gestapo agent who's looking to see what the hell you've done wrong before you've done anything wrong.
Exactly.
And that's my feeling, and I get the feeling that these CHS workers probably say, wow, I'm glad I'm a CHS worker because they won't take my kids. I just have that feeling. What's your thoughts? What about these people? Have you met any of them?
Yes. Over the years? Most of them don't have kids.
Okay.
But, yeah, the ones that do, I'm sure they feel like they are pure because of the field they're in. They don't think about it. It's amazing to watch them make decisions. And even juvenile court judges, it's like they're ordering lunch that day. They're so detached from the process and from what's happening. And it's just like they're checking boxes on paper. Like, okay, well, we'll just do this. Oh, well, they haven't
that's
got a
because,
house. Okay, well, we'll just
eliminate
their rights.
That's because they know they shouldn't be doing it. And they're just doing it for a paycheck and just basically feeding the beast that they work for.
Right.
And they know they shouldn't be involved in other people's lives. And so they just basically go through the motions. That's a clear-cut example of why this whole juvenile system we've created, this whole Child Protective Service, we'd be better off if the whole damn thing was dismantled, don't you think?
Yes, I do. And like I said, as far as it, you know, it's paid for with Title IV-E, which is the Social Security Act. We're already kind of in fear of running out of Social Security, and the payout for senior citizens is not even enough to live on as it is. That would very quickly balance out if that money were diverted from foster care back to Social Security where it belongs.
Right.
The reason adoption bonuses are flawed is because they only pay for adoptions. They don't pay for permanency. People think adoption is permanent, but 1 in 3 state adoptions fail, meaning they give the kids back. They disrupt for some reason. So that's not a permanent solution anyway. A better method would be to offer the states a bonus for permanency, for either reunification or adoption, which did not fail after 2 years. Then there would
right,
be no
well,
incentive.
Right, well, if it was a, you know, if we got to live with this crazy system, you're right. The incentive should go the other way. You should get, for example, if you have no abuse cases and you can reconcile all the problems that you have, your agency's doing your job. Keeping families
right.
together should be the goal, not splitting them apart. And that's really what's happened here. Well, you know what? It goes hand in hand with everything is backwards. Everything is reversed in this Luciferian government we've created and Luciferian Vatican organization that's behind it. And they'll just twist everything. The innocent are found guilty. The guilty are set free. You go on, and you will find that they will turn black into white, white into black. And that's how they operate, so it doesn't surprise me that this is the same thing. It just surprises me that this case has received such little attention around the country. I've only found maybe one journalist that works for Examiner.com in Denver that's covered this story, and I applaud his efforts. He also was a victim, and the reason he is he was a victim of abuse. He saw Child Protective Services firsthand. But where is the, is there a, you know, you Americans, you think there's a liberal press. Where is it? There is none. It's all controlled by the same beast we talk about. Nobody's covering this story, and they want to hush it up, and they want to make sure that this ministry is disbanded. What's your thoughts about that, about the total disbanding of the Alamo ministry as their main goal?
I would agree with that, because I've said it fast where the DHS has said, well, the money's going to run out, because he's going to be fined all this money in criminal cases, and then the women are going to file civil suits, so what are you going to do when the money runs out? And, you know, urging them to leave the church because it's going to go under anyway. I just want to mention one of the fathers, Brian Broderick, he did get a job and housing outside of the church for 2 full months. And when he had his permanency hearing on September 1st, the judge said, I told you it had to be 6 months, and took his kids away from him permanently, even though he had gotten a job and a house separate from the ministry.
Wow, I didn't know that. So, you know, here we have one guy, Brian Broderick, and maybe I did know. I think I've talked to him before, but maybe that just slipped my mind. But here we have a guy who, you know, was trying to do everything to get his children back. And how can you criticize that? And he gets a job outside the ministry for 2 months, and then the judge comes up with some flimsy excuse that he's supposed to do it for 6 months, and then he permanently takes his kids away. Now, that is a clear-cut example of wanting to disband this ministry, don't you think?
Yes, I do. And plus, it's an indication to every other parent that the judge is going to take their kids no matter what they do, because they don't have
right.
6 months. They only have a month until their hearing.
Right. And so it doesn't matter if you, you know, I've heard criticism before that if the Balamo parents should leave and then get their kids back, why do they stay together? And this is another example that no matter what they do, they're not going to get them back if this trend continues. If something doesn't change, I think that to criticize anyone for not leaving the ministry is wrong. Every parent has a right to make his own personal choice on, and basically, listen, they're setting an, by standing strong, they're setting an example and helping others, really. Even if we if they lose this case, I hope it wakes up somebody that's listening so it doesn't happen to them. So go ahead, continue. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think really it matters what they do. What do you think after working this case so closely?
I agree 100%. And, like I said, the best chance that we have right now is to really attack this judge hard and heavy. Generally, the lawyers don't want to do that. They generally, you know, are out-of-state lawyers. They meet with the judge, and the judge approves them. And, you know, what the judge is really finding out is this guy going to play ball? Or is he going to think inside the box? Can I control him? And I want to be seen as the person that's not going to play ball unless you're the ball. And that I'm going to come in and I'm going to make you follow the law, even though you've never done it in your life. As I said, if we do the judicial complaints, we're attacking the judge personally. You know, it's attacking his income source. He's held to a code of ethics. For example, on September 1st, he kicked out all of the parents, paralegals, me including. He didn't let any of us in court. that DHS had over 20 people in court, including the CASA workers, their secretary, their paralegal. That's illegal. Under his code of ethics, he has to operate a fair and unbiased courtroom. He can kick everybody out, or he can let everybody in.
Yeah, this is a kangaroo court. This judge has been told, you better find, you know, that was a book written by a guy who, his name was Sherman Skolnick. He said this to me before he passed away a few years ago. He said, you know, the most endangered species in this country is an honest judge. He wrote stories about three honest judges that he found because he was a main critic in Chicago since the 60s regarding the legal system. And each one of the fair judges was disrobed and removed from the bench for making decisions contrary to the establishment. That's what happens to a fair judge. That's why most of them are corrupt, or all of them, because they know they're going to lose their job. So you either got to make a choice. You know when you go into the system, it's corrupt to begin with. And so my question to you is, I know you're thinking day and night, what's our solutions? I know Kuhn, the attorney, is probably doing the same. He seems like a good egg. What kind of solutions could there be here? Is there any? Or is it just rely on this corrupt judge's arbitrary decision?
Well, from the juvenile court judge, we can file a writ of mandamus or writ of certiorari in the appellate court to make him do certain things, rule on certain motions. The really bad thing he did is we filed a bunch of motions to modify the case plan and things like that. And when we showed up for court, he said, oh, one person didn't get served these motions, some attorney ad litem that wasn't even on those parents' cases. And so he didn't hear him. Well, then he turned around and terminated everybody's rights or set them for termination. And so now he doesn't have to rule on the motions. That kind of thing is unethical. And that's the kind of thing that we want to bring before the Judicial Commission. That if the judge doesn't deny your motion, you can't appeal it. You can't use it for appeal grounds. And that's the easiest way for him to sidestep the issue. And we need to not let that happen. That's why we really want other parents that have different DHS cases, because the Judicial Commission doesn't necessarily care about one parent or one group of parents. You know, they think you're just bitter. But if you get 50 parents filing complaints, you know, the judge did this in my hearing, the judge didn't let my mother in, saying similar types of things, that judge will be admonished, and he will care about it because it's a threat to his income.
Exactly. Now, the problem here, now that's all we have to work with is a Judicial Commission that will oversee the judge. Now, basically, it's the foxes in the hen house control, you know, overseeing the other foxes. What we need is a citizen group that can have authority over our judges to monitor their action.
Well, we're all out of time. I wish we had more.